Alright, and we're back once again for another movie review. This one is kind of an obscure one.
This is a good flick.
It is actually, yeah. And it's funny because you remembered it from when you were a kid. You remember seeing it and you told me about it. I had never seen it. I'd never heard of it.
I watched it a million times on cable. And
it's weird I missed it. And I used to watch movies on cable all the time.
It's a weird story because it kind of scared the shit out of me in a way. It had elements of slasher films.
It's a very weird...
But it also had, like, elements of adventure. It was a little bit like elements of morality tale.
Yeah.
All happening at once. It's a well-written movie. And I thought well-acted.
Yeah. Although, I have to say that not a lot of people share that opinion, I guess. But, okay. So, here's the thing. I know. Here's the thing. The weird thing about this movie, which is called The Island, if we didn't mention it.
Yeah.
It came out when? 1980, I want to say?
Yeah, about that. I saw it on cable 1980. Times. Yeah.
Okay. So, the story of the movie was actually based on a novel by Peter Benchley, obviously, who wrote Jaws and The Deep.
Yeah.
And Peter Benchley also wrote the screenplay for this. Now, at this point, like I said, they'd already made Jaws, which was a huge blockbuster. Mm. They made The Deep, which also made a lot of money, even though I don't think anybody remembers it nowadays, except for maybe Jacqueline Bisset in her bikini or whatever. I don't even remember what that shit was about. I saw it.
I think it was about a moray eel or something, wasn't it?
Something oceany. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, so those two were like huge hits. So it was kind of like, I guess they kind of felt like Peter Benchley, we're making a movie out of a Peter Benchley book, cha-ching.
Right.
Okay, well, that didn't happen. And the thing about The Island is that it costs more money to make than Jaws and The Deep combined.
Yeah.
And yet it was a total and utter flop.
I don't know why. I think it was just had to do with timing.
I liked it too, but it's like, yeah,
I think it's aged very well.
I don't really understand why it.
I think this movie is. Well. I think this movie has aged very well. This is better than most of the crap that's coming out of Hollywood today.
I liked it. I didn't expect to, but I actually kind of liked it. And I don't know. It's weird because, like I said at the time, there's not really a lot of reviews on it or anything like that. But evidently, when it came out, it was nominated for the first, you know, they do the Golden Raspberry Awards for like the worst movie of the year, whatever. I guess 1980 or 1981 was their like inaugural Golden Raspberries. Mm-hmm. And this was nominated for worst actor and worst movie, worst director. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's not that bad.
It's not bad at all.
Oh, and it was also directed by the same guy. The guy that directed it, Michael Ritchie, he's dead now, but he did The Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
He did the Fletch movies with Chevy Chase. He later did The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy, which I know a lot of people shit on that movie, but I kind of liked it.
Well, lay it out for the people so they know what The Island is kind of about.
Okay. So The Island, basically, Michael Caine is in it. David Warner is also in it. And I fucking love David Warner. Yeah. I'll watch anything he's in.
From Tron.
Yeah. He's in a shitload of stuff.
Control.
He was in Time After Time, which we really have to do a breakdown of because I fucking love that movie so much.
And you get to see how skinny this dude is.
Oh my God. What the fuck happened to him?
His arms are like smaller.
I feel like he wasn't that skinny in Time After Time, though. And that only came out like a year before.
Man, his arms.
Maybe he got sick or something.
Smaller than like a small girl.
Because that was like some anorexia shit going on there. Yeah. But anyway, okay. So Michael Caine is like the star of the movie. And he's like, he plays a guy named Blair Maynard
That's Michael fucking Caine.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I like Michael Caine. Even though he kind of like, he's kind of like, this was in the middle of his paycheck era. Where he's just showing up for a paycheck.
That's what Bloody Disgusting says. Yeah. This is the 80s paycheck period.
There's something kind of like, so British about the guy. Most of the time, he's like a dick. He plays a dude who's just like an asshole. But you like him for some reason.
Yeah, he's like a lovable douchebag. Yeah,
you're like, you're a fucking dick, dude.
Not a douchebag. Yeah. Yeah, he's a lovable asshole.
Yeah.
He plays really good, lovable bastards.
Right.
And that hair.
Yeah, it's like a Brillo pad.
It is. It's like the little curly. I don't know what that's about.
And
but
he just looks at shit.
Yeah.
Half of Michael Caine's acting is just looking at some shit going, huh? What?
I never realized.
You got to grow up in the 70s and the 80s to understand the dynamic that is Michael Caine.
Michael fucking Caine. So Michael fucking Caine is in this movie. He plays a character named Blair Maynard, and he is like a hotshot magazine writer or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, he is super fascinated by this story of like all these boats have been disappearing.
Yeah, it's like a Bermuda Triangle.
He thinks it might be Bermuda Triangle type of thing. Like all these people have been disappearing. All these boats have been disappearing. He wants to go check it out. And of course the magazine editor's like, man, fuck that shit. Nobody cares. But finally he's like, oh, please, please, please. And he's okay. So he lets him go. Now, a complication arises when Maynard's bratty son, Justin, who I guess he's like 13, something like that.
12, I think.
12 or 13.
12 or 13, something like that.
And it turns out he got dumped on Maynard.
Yeah, the mama didn't want him.
She wanted him,
just that she sent him out to...
Yeah, like the mom has a new boyfriend and they had to go somewhere. And so like unexpectedly he gets this kid dumped on him.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I have to go down to Miami or wherever the fuck he's going to investigate this
Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, the boat disappearances. Yeah. So why don't you come with me? It'll be an adventure and we're going to Florida, so I'll take you to Disney World or whatever.
Yeah, and the kid's like, yeah, Disney World.
All right, Disney World. Yeah, right. Yeah, even though this kid is like a total douchebag, he's a total douchebag.
Kind of a dick. And
I would have left him.
Yeah.
And I'll take him to Disney World.
And they talk about Orlando, Florida, which that's where we live.
Yeah.
And they showed Orlando back in 1980 or 81. And it looked awesome back then, too. But for some reason, they make it sound like Miami and
Orlando.
And Orlando are close. They are not close.
They're really not.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you don't know, I mean, Florida is very long.
Florida's big.
Like a penis.
Yeah, oh my God.
And like, you know what I mean? And I see this a lot in movies, especially if people have never been here. Orlando and Miami are not close together.
Not at all.
It's like, well, what is it? Like a 3-hour drive? No, more. Four hours. Yeah. Because I think I used to live in Daytona Beach, which is about an hour north of here, and well, northeast kind of. And it took 5 hours to drive from there to Miami. So it's about a 4-hour drive.
Yeah. And if the traffic's good, you can make it in about 5 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, other than that, so it's far apart. So he basically goes down to Miami and he rents a boat, right?
Well, they have to take an airplane to get to an
island. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part.
Yeah, they had to take an air, and they're on this, like, really crappy cargo plane.
The
pilot's cool as fuck.
He's one of my favorite characters.
He's some kind of war veteran. He's burned up on one side of his head. He does a bunch of...
He's like, fuck it, I don't really know how to land a plane or anything. It's close enough.
Well, he just was flying by the seat of his pants. But before they left, he actually bought a gun for his son, a little .22, a little Colt Woodsman .22-type pistol. You know, the guy that sold him the pistol, it's a little sporting pistol. Guy that sold the pistol kind of got the idea that maybe Michael Caine was anti-gun or something, you know, with his British accent. But Michael Caine drops it out there that he was a Korean War veteran a Korean veteran.
Which will come in handy later.
That'll come in handy later. My ears kind of popped up because, you know, I served in Korea for a year, you know, on that DMZ. That's hard service even in peacetime.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in those infantry units, only a badass is going to survive Korea. Some of my audience members will attest to that. All right. So it's kind of funny. The movie starts off, you kind of think that this Michael Caine guy that he's playing, his name is Blair Maynard, you know, you kind of think that maybe he's kind of a wussy. But no, not really. I'll let Jenny continue.
Well, and the thing that happens here, there's like a dynamic kind of set up between Michael Caine and the kid are like estranged. Because I guess the kid goes to private school. He doesn't live with...
He doesn't know his dad too well.
He doesn't really know his dad too well. He's kind of a brat.
Yeah, and his dad really doesn't really care too much about him. I mean, he cares about him, you know, but he doesn't spend a whole lot of time with him.
Right, he hasn't spent a whole lot of time with him. It wasn't a case where when he found out the kid got dumped on him, he was like, fuck me. He wasn't like that. He was just like, oh, well, you can come along with me. It'll be fine, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they fly down to this fucking... little piece of shit island or something like that.
Yeah,
the airplane crashes. I mean, they get out, but obviously, or the movie would be over.
Yeah.
But,
they meet an anthropologist down there, a British anthropologist. Wasn't he an anthropologist?
Or something like
that. Or a philosopher. I can't remember. He was waxing philosophical through the whole, his whole scene.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot who he was. You see more of him later. I forgot what his profession was. He was kind of
anthropologist professor-y type.
Who was big into philosophy. And
Dr. Brazil, his name is. So they end up renting a boat from the anthropologist type of guy. They're going to go fishing because they're going to do some father-son bonding shit, I guess. So, you know, that's cool. Even though the kid's still pissed about going to Disney World. Yeah. Now, it should be noted that before, like, all this shit happens, at the very beginning of the movie, you actually see a few shots, and this is what we were saying, what it seems almost like.
Yeah, this movie scared me when I was a kid.
Well, because it's really weird because it's like an action-adventure type of movie, but it also has, like, slasher movie kind of elements.
Yeah, like something out of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, because, like, at the very beginning, you see, like, these people on boats, like, they're fishing and shit like that. And then, like, these shadowy people, like, climb on the boats. And, like, one guy gets his, like, fucking skull cleaved with an axe shit like that.
Battle axes.
Yeah, like, in a total, like, Friday the 13th type of moment.
a little yacht gets taken over by some shadowy figures, and they kill the dad, and then they garrot the mother, and they steal the little 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, when they show the guys, they look, you can't really see them. It's like they're covered in oil and grease. And, you know, they have like flaming torches and things like that.
Yeah.
Primitive weapons. It's pretty cool.
So, yeah. So, you've seen like little hints at the beginning, like why these boats are disappearing and stuff like that. Yeah. But, of course, Michael Caine doesn't know any of this.
Right.
When he goes down there. So, him and his son like rent a boat. Oh, we're going to go out fishing. And the kid gets excited because he catches a barracuda or whatever. So, then they see a little girl. And she needs help. She's in the water. Yeah, there's like a little lifeboat or whatever.
Yeah, her boat, her little lifeat's capsized and she's out there calling for help, bobbing in the water.
Bobbing up and down. So they go over there.
Yeah, they take the boat over there and...
to help her out.
And the thing was an ambush. It was a trap.
Yeah. It turns out that this little girl was the little girl that they kidnapped from one of the boats earlier.
Yeah.
Now, we find out when Michael Caine and the kid like wake up because they get knocked out or whatever.
Knocked out by some
guys. Now, Michael Caine does shoot one of the guys that comes on the boat.
Yeah, shoots and kills him,
He kills the guy.
With that pistol.
But they still get taken. So they wake up and they're tied up to a pole or whatever, and there's all these fucking people.
Yeah, and they're bizarre.
And they're weird.
You can barely understand what they're saying. It's some kind of weird, archaic mixture of French and English.
Yeah, it's like a weird, pidgin kind of...
mishmashed together.
Language.
And it's like archaic English and archaic French.
Yeah.
And they're reading from this big book, and they're passing judgment and talking about stuff. You don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And they look like something kind of out of Mad Max. They're real skinny, kind of filthy, mixture of a bunch of different kind of clothing. And some of the stuff that the guys are wearing are like old-fashioned stuff from like 1700s.
Yeah, like old frock coats and stuff like that.
Frock coats and things like that.
Yeah. And then, okay, it comes to pass, like, this woman comes out of a hut, and she's all, like, caked in mud.
Yeah, and then they got Blair Maynard and his son tied up. They're kind of like crucifixion style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're being judged for crimes that they've committed.
Yeah.
You know? Because Blair killed that guy.
Yeah.
On this,
and turns out that that guy was the mud woman's husband.
Yeah, this woman comes out, and she's, like, covered in this filthy-looking mud, and she spits in his face, and... she's speaking in kind of broken English, and it turns out she's pissed because she killed that Blair killed her husband.
Yeah. So, okay, turns out that this little secluded island that Maynard and his son have been taken to is populated entirely by pirates.
Yeah, not bullshit pirates.
Not bullshit pirates. These are real pirates. These are the descendants of like real actual like 17th century pirates.
Yeah.
And they have lived, they have a population on this island and they have had pretty much no contact with the outside world other than stealing shit from people's boats.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They go, that's why so many boats have been disappearing, because every time a boat goes by, they're like, hey, boat, and they go out there and they kill all the people on board, they sink
bring
the ship,
the stuff back.
And they take all their stuff. So they have been doing this for 300 years.
Yeah, and they don't look too healthy.
No.
Turns out they're pretty badly inbred.
Yeah, well, as it would be.
As it would be. They didn't have enough women. When you're watching the movie, I'd probably estimate that there were maybe about 5 women. But they mostly just show the one, the mud woman.
Yeah.
But I forgot what her name was.
Does she even have a name?
I'm not sure they even really mentioned her name.
Okay, I'm going to look on the Wikipedia page. Does the Wikipedia page... Beth?
Yeah, it might have been Beth.
I guess that was her name. Did they ever call her that?
I don't think they ever called her anything. They just called her woman.
Yeah. Because see, well, at first I thought she was the only woman. Now it turns out that she's the only viable woman.
Yeah,
she's still the only one that can have children that aren't fucked up.
Right.
Because of all the inbreeding. And only sometimes. Because evidently the man that Maynard killed had knocked her up and she had the baby and it was all fucked up.
Right, died.
So now is where it gets weird.
Yeah.
Because now that they're on the island with all these pirates and stuff like that, now initially they're going to kill Blair and keep Justin, because they need new kids, they need new blood, blah, blah, blah. And they're just going to train the kid to be one of them. But then they kind of have... Now, David Warner is like... He plays a guy named John David, and he's like the head of the pirates. Like I said, super skinny. I don't know what happened to poor David Warner in between time after time in this, but he... But he looks like alarmingly skinny.
Yeah.
So they kind of have it back and forth. And it turns out that what they're going to do... is they're going to let Michael Caine be the mud woman's pet, and he has to get her pregnant.
Yeah.
So she, like, puts a fucking metal collar around him, like, leads him around by a chain.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, essentially, like, makes him have sex with her whenever.
Yeah.
She's very forthright.
Yeah, she's real skinny and scrawny looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can tell she's, like, falling in love with him, too, though, as the thing is.
Yeah, she does kind of, like, develop feelings.
And he keeps trying to escape, and she keeps getting blamed for it. But that's kind of getting ahead of the story,
I guess. Yeah, but, you know.
Turns out that what's happening is that the new captain of the ship, who's played by David Warner, he basically runs the crew based upon this book that was left to him by the original pirate captain. I can't recall his name.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
It was only mentioned once, and it's really not a big factor. But evidently,
and the way they talk is so weird.
It's hard to understand what they're saying. I'd have to see it a couple extra times. They were left a book by the original captain on how to manage the crew. The crew is now, you know, on land. And it's got a lot of Christianity, archaic Christianity mixed into it. But you can tell as the movie continues that John David is making up some of these rules as he goes along to fit the situation.
Yeah, because I'm kind of thinking that most of the pirates cannot read.
That they can't read. Only a couple of them can read.
Yeah.
And you know, the captain being one of them. But it's pretty cool. The pirates are pretty vicious when they're doing their job, but when they're not doing their job, they're basically kind of bumbling idiots that are having a good time.
They're like drunken clowns.
They're like drunken clowns.
Basically.
And really, so there's a bunch of weird shit that's going on in the movie. They're attacking and killing people. They're garroting people. They're doing all this horrible stuff, but they're actually quite funny.
Yeah.
When you see where they come in, when you see where these pirates come from and what their mentality is, they're not taking any of this seriously. It's just being a pirate.
Yeah,
you know?
that's how pirates do.
That's how they do it. Yeah, and they don't take you. Yeah, kill them. You know.
Whatever. Yeah, it's just like they totally do not give a single.
No, they don't give.
They think it's like
they just think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to mention here this one scene because this was one of my favorite scenes in the fucking movie. Remember when the pirates go and jump on this one boat and it's like a big, kind of a big yacht. There's like a bunch of kind of yuppie-ish people on it. It turns out they were like smuggling cocaine.
They didn't even know what cocaine was.
They didn't know. They just left it.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they don't need that shit, whatever. So they kill most of the people on the boat. And then this one guy.
Yeah, this is hilarious.
He looks like a fucking, he's John Travolta-ish.
Yeah, kind of like, imagine a gay John Travolta in Speedos with his shirt tied in a little knot up in his center of his chest.
And he's like, he's kind of, he's kind of bulky, like big, like muscular kind of dude.
Yeah.
And he decides that he's going to fight the pirates.
Yeah, Kung Fu stuff. And it's absolutely
I could
hilarious.
Actually not believe my eyes when this scene came on. I'm like, this is wonderful.
Yeah, and he does and he does start whipping ass on these pirates.
He can actually do kung fu, fair.
And the pirates are watching him in single combat whip these pirates' asses, and the pirates are just loving it. They're laughing their asses off
because like
background.
One of the pirates is like, well, I could just shoot him. I'm like, no, don't shoot him, this is awesome.
Yeah, so it's funny because even though they're pirates and they're kind of idiots, there's a lot of like warrior virtue and warrior honor in it. They just want to see the fight happen, and when their own guys lose, they applaud it.
Yeah, it's like, all right, that guy got one in with his kung fu.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh my god, I love
but
that.
But eventually,
so much.
Eventually they get him.
Well, yeah, because there's like a bunch of them.
And then there was a woman, and there was a woman on the crew, a young woman, and they go, oh, we're gonna keep her. Oh, she's a good one. And then later on, you know, after they execute some of the other crew, they declare him guilty of crime. So I don't remember what crime it was. But
well,
remember, they're reading it out of
like
the book.
Like a made-up.
They're just saying, is it guilty? Yes, they're guilty, you know.
And, of something.
Well, she breaks and runs, and they just shoot her, and they just laugh, you know. Oh, well, you know.
We'll find another woman.
Because
here's the thing. Because the pirates are inbred and everything like that, you'd think that if they found, like, young women on a ship that they wouldn't want to keep them.
Well, they did,
but then they didn't. They were just like, "Oh, she tried to get away. Just fucking shoot her."
Yeah,
they just
changed their mind real quick.
Yeah,
yeah.
I guess they figured, like I said, maybe more would be coming along. Also, I think these pirates were like not the brightest bulbs.
Well, of course not. They're inbred, and then you find out that doctor was actually counseling them. The guy from the beginning.
We think
his name is Doctor.
I think his name is Doctor Brazil. Yeah, And that doctor from the beginning, who you thought was a nice guy, he was the one that rented the boat to Maynard and the son, and was all nice to him and shit. Well, it turns out that he knows about the pirates, and he actually, like, counsels the pirates. He tells them, like, where boats are going
to
be.
Yeah, he told them that they needed new blood, that they had to take in young kids and train them as their own members, right. And that they had to get fresh women.
Right.
Because evidently, whoever founded this colony didn't have enough women with him originally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're starting to peter out.
Yeah, because Dr. Brazil, if that is indeed his character's name,
we don't really know, because if you watch the movie, you'll see that the pirates all talk over each other
and they don't really refer to each other by name.
No, and actually that kind of adds to this movie's charms. It's hilarious if you slow down and try to pick up what they're all saying, because some of the shit that they're saying in the background is just fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, so this anthropologist, he has an anthropological interest in this colony because they've been unchanged for so long and like untouched by modern civilization. So he's trying to sustain them, I guess.
Yeah.
He doesn't really care like if they kill people or anything like that, because he just thinks it's so fascinating
that
they've sustained their lifestyle for this long.
He tells Blair Maynard that these are true men, that these are real men.
Yeah.
That this is how men are actually supposed to be living, that they're not supposed to be living in the modern world.
In the modern world, yeah.
And it's funny, one of the reasons why they kept Blair Maynard alive is that they thought he was a nobleman. So
because he had the same last name
as someone that they remember was mentioned in their history,
like one of their ancestors.
So they thought he was a nobleman, and the idea of getting some noble bloodlines back into their group would be a good idea. But they were making up a lot of excuses to keep him alive. Now later, Dr. Brazil tells him, he says, "Oh, you think that they're really just keeping you alive for your magic dick?" You know what I mean? He goes, no. They basically liked you, they would just keep you.
Yeah, because the doctor was like, they could have killed me too when I stumbled across this island. Yeah. But
if they didn't like you, they just killed you.
Now,
we have to start getting into the angle of what was happening to the son.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. This is kind of like the whole theme of the movie. Now, Justin, the bratty son, he gets to...
They start torturing him.
Oh, now, here's an interesting thing, and I wanted to make sure I didn't forget this. There is a scene in this movie where he's kind of like... He's fastened to a pole by his neck, by like a rope or something like that. And they put like toothpicks or matchsticks or something like that, like under his eyes, like to keep his eyes open. Now, this movie came out in 1980. Dario Argento's opera came out in 1987. Mm. Now, those of you who are Dario Argento fans will remember the very iconic image, I think it was even on some of the posters, of this woman that had pins or needles like taped under her eyes to keep her eyes open, and she's fastened to a pole by a rope because the killer wanted her to watch like him killing people. So I'm kind of thinking that Dario Argento maybe got that idea from this movie, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But it's very similar. So what they do, and this is the same thing that they did, that the pirates did with the little girl that you saw them kidnapping from the beginning, and she, you know, was a decoy to bring Maynard and Justin into the fold, is they basically they torture them for several days. They keep them awake, and then, you know, they give them, like, propaganda, like they read out of the book and shit like that.
Yeah.
And so they're brainwashing them, essentially, the children. The little girl was brainwashed, and now Justin is being brainwashed. Yeah.
To be a pirate.
To be a pirate.
Actually, to be the son of the pirate chief.
Yeah.
The captain.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants another son figure, because he has a son figure. He's like a little, he's Portuguese or Brazilian or something like that.
Yeah, well, they don't really say what he was. Just the captain, John David, said that he was a Portuguese Sambo.
Yeah.
That's what he called him. Portuguese Sambo.
That's what he called him. So essentially he's implying, well, I wanted a white kid.
Yeah, that's later on. That's a cool scene. He goes, I had this one, but he Portuguese and Sambo. I am taking this one now as my son. You know what I mean?
So he's basically...
he got pissed. The other kid, with the first kid, is like, fuck. And they got him off of a boat earlier. They show how they got him. He was just working for an old guy who had a game fishing boat. So it's plausible that he was an orphan.
Yeah.
So it was a huge advantage. It was a huge advantage for this kid to be in this pirate cult, basically, is what it is.
But the thing about Justin, Maynard's son, Michael Caine's son, is that he takes to this pirate shit like that. He's like, yeah, I'm into this shit.
Yeah.
They let me shoot guns. They let me kill people, which is... Yeah. He even, like, shoots, like, a fruit out of his dad's hand and all this other kind of stuff. And he says something to his dad, like, I could have killed you easily if I wanted to. Like, he just totally...
Yeah, so they start taking him out on raids and everything. Dr. Brazil, and we are assuming that the Dr. Brazil that's mentioned is the doctor we're talking about. There was a pirate that was also a doctor. He may have been Dr. Brazil. I'm not sure exactly. It's hard to keep all these characters straight, and there really isn't much written about this movie. Not a lot of detail.
And like I said, I don't really think most of them are not referred to by name.
Yeah, it's just you and that woman and him. And So anyway, Dr. Brazil goes to Blair while he's still captive, you know, being used as a breeding slave, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And says, you know, he says, I want my son back and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, you should be proud of your son. Your son would have never been the man that he's going to be. Because, you know, they're going to turn him into a pirate. He's going to live as a real man, something you really couldn't give him.
Right.
Which that all kind of comes into play later is there's kind of an underlying kind of morality tale and that is kind of like professional guys need to have adventures with their sons or they may fall prey to more adventurous men and they might end up falling into a life of crime.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of later on in the movie. They kind of go head to head, Blair Maynard and John David, you know, who's the pirate captain. And each one kind of has to use warrior virtue to score a victory. You got the pirate using kind of a primitive warrior virtues. And then you have Blair Maynard using the warrior virtues of a modern man as a Korean War veteran.
Yeah.
And how it plays out in the very end. Yeah, the modern man will win out in the end, you know, because of technology, really, which you see this in the final scene, which I'm not sure if I should skip so far ahead.
It's not really that far ahead. I mean, basically.
In the final scene, spoiler alert, Blair Maynard, the pirates attack, they bite off more than they can chew eventually. What they do is they attack a Coast Guard cutter.
Yeah, the Coast Guard comes to investigate.
Yeah, and this really is a Coast Guard vessel. They give credits to this Coast Guard vessel at the end of the movie. And the pirates board this Coast Guard cutter, and it looked kind of like a small version. It wasn't an Oliver Perry class missile destroyer. It was just some kind of a fairly large patrol vessel, you know, probably large enough to maybe hold a small helicopter. I don't know. I'd have to see it again. But anyway, the pirates board it. They wipe out the crew, the Coast Guard crew. Maynard sneaks on there and tries to rescue his son. He gets into a big head-to-head with the enemy pirate captain. And once he kills the captain, he goes back up on deck and he looks down and he sees on the deck all the pirates with all the booty and that they've collected. They're trying to load it down onto their little skiffs so they can take it back to the island. And he realizes that right next to him, under a tarp, is an M2 50 caliber machine gun. Big, heavy machine gun.
And he's like, I know how to use one of these. Because I know how to use those.
Big belt-fed machine gun, 50 cal. You know, these rounds on a 50 caliber.
Hot damn.
Almost 5-inch long rounds, you know. And he just unleashes on the whole pirate group, you know, with this 50 cal. And there's just really cool slow motion shots of these guys just being blown to pieces. And he just
like
kills
I said,
them.
Like a slasher movie.
Basically kills them all. Now, there were some of the women and there were a few of the pirates that didn't go are probably evidently still back on the island.
Yeah, because I don't think all of them went on the raids, but most of them did.
And the little kids were still there and the captives were still there. But they just, the way they kind of end the film, they let you know that the Coast Guard is now aware that the pirates came from that island and that there were pirates. So you assume that the little kids were rescued and that there was...
Yeah, because they showed another Coast Guard boat coming after. But see, like I said, this was kind of interesting and it kind of relates back to what you were saying before. Because, I mean, the whole underlying message of the film, I guess, since Blair Maynard he wasn't a bad guy, but he was just kind of like an absent father.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, he was a more modern guy. He wasn't mean to his kid, but he was just kind of like brushing him off all the time. Just like, yeah, whatever.
He was career oriented.
Yeah, he was very career oriented, not family oriented. Right. So what you were saying before about, you know, when you treat your kid like that, it's very easy for them to get sucked into something else. Because like I said, yeah. Justin immediately is like, yeah, I'm a fucking pirate now. He takes the name to Barb.
Yeah.
And that's what he's called.
If you don't provide a sense of adventure for your sons, they might find that sense of adventure in some kind of an outlaw gang.
Right, exactly. Like that. That's exactly what happens. But the interesting thing is that at the very end, when, you know, the kid sees his dad, like, just fucking wiping out all the pirates.
Yeah, all of a sudden he appreciates his dad.
Well,
yeah.
And not only that, but then David Warner's character is willing to...
Sacrifice
Justin.
Yeah.
You know, so he doesn't get killed.
Yeah.
So he sees, oh, well, my real dad would never do that. Yeah,
he basically uses Tubarb. I guess that's the kid's new pirate name. He uses him as a hostage against the father.
Right.
Which, you know, that...
Which, like I said, Michael Caine's character would never have done that. As absent a father as he was. And the kid realizes that.
Yeah, kid kind of was snapped back to reality that this dude isn't my dad.
He's not my dad, and he's willing to kill me.
Right.
Just to save his own ass.
So, you know, blood runs thick and, you know, blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, so that was kind of the message of the movie. But like I said, it's interesting to me because... I mean, while the tone of it maybe was kind of uneven and people thought that was jarring maybe, I can't really understand like why this didn't do as well. I mean, obviously it's not going to do as well as Jaws because that was like a fucking great movie. But
this was the early 80s. You could not trust the movie industry at the time. You couldn't trust the critics of the 80s. I mean, look, The Thing flopped.
True.
All right. Escape from New York flopped.
Yeah.
A lot of really good films flopped in those days. And this one, I think, is better than Jaws.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
I think it's better than Jaws.
But I think it's better than... I liked it a lot better than The Deep, which did a lot better than it. I didn't see it. You know what I mean? Which was written by the same guy and everything like that.
This was a high-quality flick. They spent a lot of money on it. The boats looked good.
$22 million, which was a lot of money.
Yeah, the boats looked good. All the aquatic shots looked good. The costumes looked good. I thought the acting was excellent.
My favorite shit was during the pirate raids. Like, those guys moved and acted like real pirates.
Yeah, they were doing stuff on par with Mad Max, like a Mad Max movie, jumping from one thing to the next.
Yeah, like climbing up all the rigging and everything like that. Cool. It was rad.
Quite cool.
Like, they were just like, they were like little monkeys, like climbing all
the rigging. Yeah, very, very, very underrated movie. And this is one that if you've never seen it, you should go back and you have to, actually, I think you can see it on YouTube. I think it was on Instant Play last I checked.
Oh, okay.
So you can see it on YouTube.
We got it on. Did we get it on DVD or
got it on DVD? I think it paid $10 for it.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. I wanted it for my collection.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's Universal Studios.
It's not available on Blu-ray.
No.
It's just DVD. Yeah,
well, it came out Universal Studios like in 2012 or something like that. I guess they released like a lot of kind of forgotten movies from their series called the Vault series or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of part of that series where they kind of were cleaning out their vaults of like movies that people forgot about.
This is a forgotten classic. And if you haven't seen it, man, you should really go out and check this movie out.
I really liked it like much more than I was expecting.
It stood the test of time. It's a lot better than I even remembered it.
Yeah.
And they don't make movies like this anymore.
Not really,
no.
Yeah. And like I said, it also had kind of slasher elements.
Yeah,
it had
elements.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. So it was kind of similar to Jaws in that way, I suppose.
Yeah, it had a mixture of a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, because it was like this sort of really grisly like,
it was like slasher with historical documentary. With action movie combined with comedy.
Yeah.
Some of the shit the pirates said was just fucking absolutely hilarious.
And like I said, the scene with the guy in the Speedos was fucking...
Yeah.
That was delightful.
And it's not, you know, they don't play any hokey soundtrack or to make it goofy or Jar Jar Binks or that kind of crap. It's just pirates saying some funny shit while they were killing people and stuff, you know, or fighting, you know?
Which I kind of think is probably what pirates were really like.
It looked realistic to me.
Back in the day. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't alive back then. But I kind of got the vibe that it's like, yeah, if I was alive back then, yeah, that's exactly what pirates would be like.
Well, you know, they would, you know, board a ship, and when the fighting would break out, they were cheering both sides, cheering for their side and the other side,
I forgot to mention, too, that, like, the guy... Now, was this the guy that got killed by the John Travolta Kung Fu guy? And remember they were throwing him overboard?
Yeah, they were taking his shoes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, they seemed bummed out, like, when one of their crew died. Like, oh, we lost X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And they're like, aw. But then, like, they had the guy, and they were going to throw him over, the dead guy, and they were going to throw him overboard. And then one of the pirates, like, next to him is just, like, looking at his shoes and going, and then he measures his own foot, and he's like, hey, I can wear those. And he just takes his shoes.
Takes his shoes off.
So they're just, like, so casual.
Yeah, it's like casual. They didn't really make a big deal about it.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, he's dead.
Don't throw him overboard, those boots.
Yeah, those are good. I can use those.
Yeah.
Very practical, those pirates.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's really good. If you like Michael Caine and if you liked...
I like Michael Caine.
And if you, yeah.
And we got another Michael Caine coming, but I'm going to keep that one under wraps.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do that one in a couple
There's
of weeks.
There's several Michael Caine movies that are worth mentioning.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is one that, like I said, not a lot of people seem to have seen it. So if you like Jaws and the Deep and another kind of Peter Benchley type of maritime stuff, and if you like pirates, you might want to see it.
With slasher?
With, yeah, a little bit of a slasher movie aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely one worth checking out. And that'll do it for our latest movie review. Remember to go and check us out on Patreon, go and check out our blog, and all that other stuff that I usually say. And we will see you next time.
Yep.
Bye.